I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Premiums for Affordable Care Act health insurance plans are set to skyrocket next year because Congress has failed to do anything about it. A new White House healthcare plan was rumored, but not released yet. Charles Gaba from acasignups.net explains what's happening with the Affordable Care Act. Welcome to Care Talk Live, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and get you answers. I'm Laura Packard, cancer survivor and healthcare advocate, here to help you. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202-838-6837, and our experts will answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get next week's Care Talk show. In today's episode, we're talking about why health insurance prices are going up next year, what Congress has failed to do about it, and what happens next. So welcome to Charles, the founder of acasignups.net.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Thanks for joining us. So let's start with what's going on. Why are Affordable Care Act insurance premiums going up next year?
Okay, well, so there's a couple of reasons, but by far the biggest one is that the enhanced tax credits, the enhanced subsidies that have been in place for the last 5 years are currently set to expire in exactly 1 month. Well, 1 month from yesterday, actually, on New Year's Eve this year. The ACA has always included a sliding scale, sliding income scale of federal financial assistance for enrollees who earn up to a certain income threshold. But when that was originally passed back in 2010, the subsidy formula was always too stingy. It was never generous enough. Basically, they got through what they could at the time, and that was it. And there's been a lot of complaints about that over the years. And that was the case up until 5 years ago when, as part of the American Rescue Plan Act in early 2020, Congress, the Democrats in Congress and President Biden, they passed the American Rescue Plan Act, which, among other things, included a significant upgrade to the ACA tax credit formula. So it did two things. First, it made the existing formula considerably more generous for those who are already eligible for some subsidies, but it also removed something called the subsidy cliff, which is basically, prior to this, if you earn more than four times the federal poverty level, which is around it's around $60,000, $62,000 a year if you're single, around $130,000 a year for a family of four. But if you earn even $1 more than that, then instead of the subsidies gradually tapering off as your income goes up, they would just cut off immediately. So you would have to go to paying full price for whatever the policy premiums are. And so those were two major problems, and both of those were basically fixed by the enhanced tax credits in the ARPA. That was put in place originally for 2 years, and then it was extended by another 3 years as part of the Inflation Reduction Act a year or so later. But unfortunately, that was the end of the line. That was, again, as far out as they could make it. So those are currently scheduled to expire at the end of this year. Now, when that happens, not all the subsidies will go away. but the enhanced formula will revert back to the pre-2021 formula. And but it's actually going to be even worse than that, because there were some additional changes that the Trump administration made earlier this year, some administrative changes to how some other back behind the scenes stuff works, which actually makes the unenhanced subsidy formula even less generous yet. So that's what people are facing going into January, a month from today.
And I just want to emphasize again that this is a choice. Congress chose earlier this year with a big, beautiful bill to extend tax breaks for billionaires, but they also chose not to extend health insurance help for middle and working class Americans. But because this is a choice they made, we're here now, and this is, they could still choose to do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, they could. Obviously, the clock is ticking very rapidly now, and there's going to be some fallout, no matter if they were to vote tomorrow to go ahead and extend the enhanced subsidies, the enhanced tax credits, within the next 24 hours, there would still be some fallout. I mean, for the most part, that would avoid, that would avoid most of the worst damage, but there would still be some negative fallout from it regardless. For example, the underlying unsubsidized premiums, that is the base premiums that all the plans have been set at, those are higher than they normally would be for next year, aside from subsidies, for various reasons. And one of those reasons, some of that's just going to be normal inflation, medical inflation and things like that. Some of it's because of the tariffs that have been put into place for, medical equipment and pharmaceuticals that come from overseas, that sort of thing. And some of it is because the insurance carriers, they expected this to be coming. I mean, they've known this was coming for a long time. And so what they said was, look, if those enhanced subsidies aren't extended, then what's going to happen is we know that a lot of people, several million people likely, are probably going to be priced completely out of the market. They're going to drop their coverage. The people most likely to do that are going to tend to be younger, healthier people, who feel that they will, I'm willing to risk going bare or not having insurance. And so that in turn is going to make the rest of the people on the ACA exchanges, including myself and you, are going to be tend to be sicker and more expensive to treat, in aggregate, which means a more expensive risk pool, which means that they raise their premiums even more as a result of that, because they're anticipating that happening. So it's like that sort of thing. The unsubsidized premiums, which are going up around 26% on average next year, that's not going to change. So if you're not getting a subsidy, then whether the subsidies are extended or not, if you're still unsubsidized, if you still have to pay full price no matter what, your rates are going to go up because of that, regardless of what happens. So,
exactly. Yeah, my insurance rates for next year are up 21%. So that is repeated in households across the country. Mm-hmm. So word was that the White House was going to release their own health care plan last week. But that didn't happen. So first, can you tell us what you heard, what word was that was going to be in this plan? And then why didn't they release it?
Yeah. There have been, Republicans, basically, they're trying to do anything they can, not, other than simply extend the subsidies, or extend the enhanced tax credits, which, to me, I mean, that would be the easiest, just from a political point of view, much less a policy point of view, that would be the most obvious no-brainer, would be just kick the can down the road a couple more years and deal with it later. But they don't want to do that, or at least most of them don't want to do that. There are a handful of Republicans who live in, vulnerable districts, of course, who have put together, they've gotten together with a couple of moderate Democrats. They've come up with something called the HOPE Act, which I've read, which would basically do that. It would basically extend it for another 2 years. It would put some anti-fraud measures into place. It would taper them off, make them a little bit less generous. But otherwise, I would be fine with that bill. However, other than that, they really don't, most Republicans don't want to do that. And so they're coming up with all sorts of other things that they're trying to scramble to do. Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, he came up with his idea. Rick Scott came up with some crazy idea. But yes, the White House, well, there was a story. Officially, the White House did not introduce anything. What happened was last week, I believe it was last Monday, I think, they came out with, there was a story that broke in like, you know, Politico and Axios and other, you know, and other news outlets that supposedly there was this framework, this like draft framework that was floating around from the White House for a bill or for a plan that would supposedly include a 2-year extension of the enhanced tax credits. But with some major, and I mean major caveats attached to it. And again, I'm not based, when I wrote, did my write-up on it, it was based on what the reporting was. I have not seen the actual draft myself, but I've seen several different stories from different news article, news outlets, which seem to put together, there's about a, you know, half dozen or so major provisions that are supposedly included. The first one sounds good. It would be a 2-year extension of the enhanced tax credits, presumably at the current threshold, which so far so good. However, it would also bring back the subsidy cliff that I mentioned earlier. It would bring it back at a higher income level now, which is fine as long as the increase is enough of one. It would raise it from 400% of poverty, that is 4 times the poverty level, up to 700%. Now, that would be better than 400, of course, but in my view, that would still be, you know, too low, because there are several states, there's about a half dozen states where older enrollees in particular, if you're in your high 50s or low 60s, if you happen to earn even $1 more than that cutoff point, then you would still be hit with a full price. And there are a handful of states where that would still be really expensive, especially if you're older. But like, if that was it, if that was the only provision, 2 years, 700%, I would probably take it. However, it does include some additional major caveats. The first of which is a mandatory minimum premium. And this is something that they've been talking about for a while. And the idea is that right now, there are millions of people who are eligible because of the way that the subsidy formula works. There are millions of people who are eligible for $0 premium plans. That is, you know, where the subsidy is equal to or even greater than the full price of the premium, especially like if you're younger in a low cost state and so on. So people can get a plan for nothing. They would still have like a deductible and some co-pays and such, but basically the premiums wouldn't cost them anything. And so because there have been some issues with fraud, with enrollment fraud on the broker side, there are some unscrupulous brokers. The vast majority are honest, but there are a few, you know, bad apples that have been basically enrolling people into policies without their knowledge or without their permission, or they've been switching them from one plan to another without their knowledge or permission. And so this is supposedly a measure to crack down on that, would be to require a minimum premium, no matter, basically, even if you're eligible to pay nothing, you would have to pay a minimum of, let's say, $5 a month. Now, there's two problems with this. The first is that even $5 a month, I mean, that doesn't sound like much to most people, but if your income is really low, especially if you only earn like $25,000 a year, $5 a month, that can mean the difference between, you know, buying groceries. That could be, you know, paying your electric bill or other utilities, paying rent. You know, $5 a month can actually be quite a bit, especially at lower income levels. The second problem is that, like, if the sole reason to include that is to make sure that people know that they're enrolled in a plan, you know, a dollar would suffice, even a penny would suffice, because the point is to alert people, to make sure they get an invoice for something just so they know they're in the plan. But the third problem is that something called administrative burden, which is simply that there have been multiple studies that have found that if you put any sort of barrier, any sort of administrative burden on people, basically you tend to lose a significant chunk of your enrollment. There's a lot of people, especially if they're, you know, if they're less educated, or if maybe they don't speak English, or they're not used to, like if somebody's been on Medicaid for a long time where they didn't have to pay anything, and then they suddenly start, now they're on the exchange and they're getting invoices that they've never gotten before, it can be confusing, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe they don't have a credit card, you know, that sort of thing. So you tend to lose, you have slippage, and it tends to be the very people who are at the most vulnerable parts of the population. So that's a problem as well. So, but again, if that was the only, you know, thing in addition to the 700% cutoff and the 2-year cutoff, I might still take it. Like we're really getting up to the edge here. But there's also several additional provisions, one of which is that they would want to fund this by eliminating something called silver loading. And this is something that gets very wonky and messy, but the bottom line is that there's a way of pricing policies that most carriers in most states have put into effect, which helps, it basically helps leverage whatever tax credits are available for enrollees. And the end result of it is that there are millions of people who are getting a much better deal on bronze and gold plans than they otherwise would, thanks to this process called silver loading. And the plan is purported to basically eliminate that, is what it amounts to, which would, it would help a small number of unsubsidized enrollees at the higher income levels, but it would harm millions of lower to mid-range enrollees, basically people who earn between 200 to 400% of the poverty level. There's, I think it's around 7 or 8 million people in that category, I believe, where they would see their net premiums increase as a result of this. And that's even with the, you know, enhanced subsidies, there would still be some increase in what they have to pay. So now we're into, you know, the addition, every time you add one of these caveats, one of these poison pills, like it just makes it a worse and worse deal. And at this point, I've sort of flipped around and said, well, no, you know, don't take the deal. And then finally, actually not finally, there's more than this, but this would also supposedly include some version of Senator Cassidy's health savings account proposal, in which he's proposing that you take a chunk of the enhanced subsidies and let people, instead of using it to pay for the premiums, they would use it to pay for, they would use it to go towards a health savings account, which would then be used to cut down on like deductibles and co-pays and things like that. But only if you were to enroll in a bronze plan, which tend to be the higher, you know, the higher deductible, higher out-of-pocket cost plans. I don't know the exact details of this proposal. Again, this is all based on, you know, speculation, but the general idea would be to encourage people to enroll in a worse plan, you know, in plans that have higher deductibles, higher co-pays, higher out-of-pocket costs, less comprehensive coverage. I could possibly see it working sort of, but it would get messy and complicated. It would involve bank accounts, you know, special accounts that money goes into. I could see a lot of room for abuse and fraud and, you know, technical errors. I cannot see any possible way of anything like that being set up. You know, if it was to go into effect in 2027, maybe, you know, a year from now, maybe they might work out the bugs before, but there's no way that they could get this going in the short term, even if it was a good idea, which it is not. And there's some additional stuff as well, but I'll pause there for now.
Okay, so that's all what was in the rumored White House plan, but it has not been released. Mm-hmm. And honestly, do you think the White House is going to release a health care plan? Because this has been, I mean, there has been a rumored Trump health care plan for over a decade now. So do you think there's going to be a plan?
Well, it's always 2 weeks away. So, you know, that's and as it happens, today's December 1st, 2 weeks from today happens to be the 15th, which happens to be the first, the initial deadline in most states for January 1st coverage. So, you know, hey, 2 weeks, right? I don't know. as I was saying before we started the show, when I wrote up my analysis of this proposed purported framework, I spent several hours, you know, a week ago working on this, and literally moments before I hit publish, the news it broke on CNN that, oh, never mind, they're pulling the plan. They're not introducing anything. And sure enough, they didn't. So like, I felt kind of foolish that I put all this time into, you know, writing about this thing that apparently isn't going to happen. Or maybe it changes from day to day, from minute to minute in some cases. And the irony about this ongoing joke, you know, for the last decade about, you know, his beautiful, wonderful plan coming out 2 weeks down the road for 10 years now. The additional irony is that the one thing that, you know, the insurance industry hates more than anything is uncertainty, you know, and when you throw that much uncertainty into the mix, it just causes a big mess. And when you're talking, you know, again, we're literally, 30 days away from this happening. And there's only like 18 legislative days, you know, because Congress, they're not, you know, of course they have their holiday break and all that. So they only have like 18 days in which they even theoretically could vote on something like that. So I have no idea at this point.
Well, thanks for summing it all up. And where can people get updates for what's going on with healthcare?
Sure. Well, you know, you can visit my site at acasignups.net. You can also follow me on Blue Sky, just at charlesgaba.com. I just recently got ramped up over on Substack, so you can find me there. And of course, there's your site and your channel, so people can always follow you there as well. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Charles.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
And now our experts will answer your health insurance questions. So welcome to Louise Norris, health insurance and healthcare reform analyst at healthinsurance.org, and Diane Archer, founder of Just Care and senior advisor on Medicare to Social Security Works. So let's start with Diane in the latest news from Congress and the White House. So let's talk about CMS and Medicare Advantage.
Yes. So there is some big news on that front. It's not entirely awful, but there's a lot of bad stuff. So we're going to start with the fact that last week CMS issued its proposed rules for 2027. And the rules concerned the ones I'm focusing on, Medicare Advantage and what's happening there. And what they did, I'm not going to get technical here, is basically take away a lot of protections that people had against misleading advertisements, misleading sales agents for Medicare Advantage insurers. And instead, what they said was that these insurers didn't even have to tell people that there were state health insurance assistance programs in every state providing free, unbiased help to them. So what that means is that right now, people are often misled by sales agents and steered into plans that they shouldn't be in, that are harmful to their health. And now they are even more likely to be misled. So that's terribly concerning. And what I want to emphasize here is that enrolling in a Medicare Advantage plan at this point still is a gamble because there are so many bad actors. There are some good guys out there, I'm sure, but there are too many who are inappropriately delaying and denying critical care, critical life-saving care. And so there are a lot of preventable deaths in Medicare Advantage plans that have been documented. And that's a serious concern. And on that, the administration did absolutely zero. So nothing to add new guardrails to the prior authorization process that insurers use in Medicare Advantage to delay and deny care, even though Republicans and Democrats alike have been speaking out against the egregious practices of many Medicare Advantage insurers in that area. So that was unfortunate. And they actually took away a couple of protections. They were small in that space. So that also was concerning. Okay, so here's a little bit of good news and then some more even better news. A little bit of good news is that if you are in a Medicare Advantage plan and you are seeing a doctor who is in network and you're happy with that doctor, or you're using a hospital and relying on that hospital and happy with that hospital, the administration is proposing that if that hospital or that doctor leaves the plan's network mid-year, you have a guaranteed right to leave as well. And that is huge because continuity of care is really important to all of us. And it is the case that too often hospitals and physicians leave Medicare Advantage plans mid-year. And it used to be that CMS would have to rule that it was okay to leave, which would take time and make it hard for people to stay with their physicians. So that's really good news. Unfortunately, the proposed rule does not guarantee people the ability to buy Medicare supplemental coverage or Medigap if they want to switch to traditional Medicare. So yes, you can switch to another Medicare Advantage plan if you'd like to stay with your doctor, but no, you are not guaranteed the ability to buy the supplemental coverage you probably want if you're switching to traditional Medicare. In the other good news department, and then I'm done, and this has to do with prescription drugs, the administration did just release prices for negotiated prices, 85% less is what they're saying, for 15 drugs that are commonly used and quite costly beginning in 2027. So we have the first bunch out in 2026, and now thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, another 15 that the Trump administration has negotiated for then. And that includes some cancer drugs and weight loss drugs like Wegovy. So there are some drugs that a lot of people take in the mix, and it should bring down cost to the government, which means it should bring down premiums, maybe a little for everyone. And it should bring down out-of-pocket costs for people who need these drugs as well. So that is very good news.
Thank you, Diane. And also we had Vinny from Maryland Healthcare for All on a previous show talking about prescription drug affordability boards and work in the states. And a lot of that state-based prescription drug pricing work is based on the federal. So if we lower it, if Medicare negotiates better prices, some of the states will follow and save states money and state taxpayers. So this is good news for more than just people on Medicare.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And now a question from Jack from YouTube, who said that he had retiree health benefits waiting for him until the Affordable Care Act passed, but those benefits were stripped and his pension is just high enough to make it so that he doesn't qualify for subsidies and he can't afford to pay $1,200 a month on his from his already taxed pension, and he'll retire without insurance because of the Affordable Care Act. So Louise, do you want to get into more of what Jack is saying?
Sure. So first of all, Jack, I'm sorry you are facing this situation. Obviously, paying $1,200 a month for health insurance is a huge burden. And this goes back to what Charles was talking about earlier with if Congress doesn't do something to extend the subsidy enhancements, then we go back to having that subsidy cliff at 400% of the poverty level. And if you earn $1 more than that, suddenly you qualify for no subsidy at all, and you're stuck paying full price for your health insurance. The only way that gets solved is if Republicans in Congress get on board with extending the subsidy enhancements in some shape or form. As Charles was explaining, there are various options being tossed around for that. But if nothing happens, then yes, somebody in that situation who earns a little more than 400% of the poverty level would not qualify for any marketplace subsidy and face paying the full premium themselves. Just to clarify another point, though, your employer's decision to stop offering retiree health benefits is not because of the ACA. In fact, the ACA actually provided a subsidy program in the early years. In the first few years after the ACA was enacted, they actually helped employers basically subsidize the cost of retiree coverage for the first few years until the marketplaces got up and running. That was a decade ago. Employers are still free to offer retiree health benefits or not as they see fit. There's certainly no requirement that they do so. There never has been a requirement that they do so. And the ACA certainly did not tell them they couldn't. So that is your employer's decision. Employers make those sort of decisions based on their own financial situation. So just to clarify, it's not the ACA's fault that your employer is no longer offering that benefit. But then again, the situation you're in is certainly a real problem. If your pension is a little more than 400% of the poverty level and you're facing not having a subsidy at all in 2026. So my advice would be to talk with a tax advisor to see if there's a way you can get your income a little below that 400% of the poverty level limit. And one idea that you can potentially consider is if you enroll in a plan through the marketplace that is HSA eligible, which for 2026, that includes all bronze plans, any bronze plan in your marketplace will be HSA eligible. There are also usually in some areas, there might be a silver plan, might be a gold plan, but if you focus on the bronze plans, they are all HSA eligible in 2026. If you pick one of those plans, you are then allowed to contribute. If it's just yourself, you can contribute up to $4,400 to an HSA. If you have at least one other family member on the plan, you can contribute up to $8,750 to an HSA. And the money you contribute to an HSA will reduce your income that they use to calculate whether you're eligible for a subsidy. So since you mentioned that your pension puts you just a little above the income threshold for getting a subsidy, that is one way that you could consider getting your income down is by actually just picking a plan that's HSA eligible, making those HSA contributions. You'd have to make the HSA contributions by the tax filing deadline in 2027. So by about April 15th of 2027. And then you could qualify, if that gets your income into the subsidy eligible range, you could end up getting a subsidy in 2026, even if Congress doesn't do anything to extend the subsidy enhancements. But also, as Charles was mentioning earlier, stay tuned because this might change before we get to the end of the year as far as what happens with the subsidies.
Thanks, Louise. And one last question for Diane. Since Medicare open enrollment is about to end, is there anything that people should be doing right now before the Medicare open enrollment deadline?
Great question. If you have not yet checked your Medicare options for next year and compared them to your current Medicare choices, it really should be something you put to the top of your list. If you're in traditional Medicare with a Medigap, you don't have to think about that at all. If you have a prescription drug plan, though, through your traditional Medicare because of it, definitely take a look. I took a look and found that if I switch plans, I could save about $10 a month, which is meaningful. And if you're in a Medicare Advantage plan, absolutely look both at what your benefits will be next year, what your costs will be, and also look at whether the drugs that you're taking will still be covered under that plan, because you still can switch to another Medicare Advantage plan that might be better. And just in general, be aware that according to the research, most people don't actually take a good look at what their options are for the following year. And most people end up spending a lot more money as a result on their Medicare products. So definitely, if you want to save money, you should take a look at your options before December 7.
Yes. So the clock is ticking, everybody. And thanks, everyone, for joining us to learn more about what's happening to our health insurance in America next year. Please text or call in your health insurance and healthcare questions at 202 888-683-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more on healthcare in America. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Laura Packard, and this is Care Talk. Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.